Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
I'm Melissa Lee, and this is Fast Money. Tonight's trader lineup, Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Brian Kelly, and Kate Battis, CEO of Grace Capital, will join us in just moments. We start off with big breaking news on the banks. Just moments ago, the Fed giving the okay for buybacks, and we are already starting to get banks announcing their plans. Let's get straight to Leslie Picker with all the details. Leslie.
Hey, Melissa. In an unprecedented second stress test this year, the Fed said it will allow banks to resume buying back stock with limitations after they were prevented from doing so earlier this year. J.P. Morgan has already said its board has authorized a $30 billion buyback program to begin in the first quarter of next year, and that stock popping on the news. Share repurchases made up about 70% of the industry's capital payout to shareholders pre-COVID, but the largest U.S. banks voluntarily suspended buybacks in March as the pandemic-induced shutdowns that roiled the economy and the financial markets. The Fed then said in June that all banks subjected to its stress tests were required to halt their buyback programs and cap their dividend payouts. Now, today, the Fed said that banks could restart share repurchases, expanding similar limitations already in place with dividends. These amounts are based on a formula that's essentially tied to the last year of the bank's income. Now, these rules will be in place through the first quarter of 2021. The Fed notes they may be extended after that. Under the stress test, all 33 banks maintained enough of a cushion for their minimum risk-based capital requirements levels that will not reset at this time, according to the Fed. Mel.
Leslie, thank you. Leslie Picker with the latest on the stress test here in the after-hour session. It's not just J.P. Morgan with that massive $30 billion share repurchase plan announcement, but also the KRE, the regional bank ETF, that's popping 3%. The XLF, the broader financials ETF on the S&P 500, that's up by more than 3%. Karen Feinerman, this is probably largely expected for a bank like a J.P. Morgan, and yet we are seeing that big pronounced move in the after-hours.
I actually wasn't really expecting it right now, to be honest. So it's nice that, you know, maybe I just missed it. I should have known to expect it. I'm a little bit surprised that it didn't come a little bit later. So $30 billion, that's huge. That's, I don't know, 8%+ of the market cap of J.P. Morgan. I'm a little bit surprised that they did this now because I don't think we have fully past we passed the worst of COVID. I certainly hope we have, but I think there's still more damage to come. I think we, you know, haven't seen the end of forbearance and what that will look like. And so I don't know. It feels just maybe a tad premature. What would be the downside if they kind of just hung on to excess capital and built it up? I understand it's not great for your ROE and whatnot, but so I'm a little bit surprised. I'm happy. It was just earlier than I thought. I'm happy to be, you know, fairly exposed to the bank stocks. Good for them. I'm also a little bit surprised that they're allowing buybacks over dividend. They are still allowed to pay dividends, but over an increase of the dividend, because maintaining the dividend for bank shareholders or even increasing it is a really important thing. Mm-hmm. I think even more important than buybacks. But doesn't matter if it was surprising to me. Yeah. It's still very good news.
Taken at face value, though, this is surely a vote of confidence in how well capitalized the banks are and how big those cushions are, Tim Seymour. I mean, the Fed is going to, you know, subject these banks to very rigorous tests. They've got enough capital. It seems like a big green light for investors who also believe, by the way, that this is a big reopening play.
I think it's not only a big green light, it's kind of bizarre on the same week where the Fed gave you a very dour outlook for the dynamics of the economy, isn't it? They don't make sense. They don't fit on the same page. And the Fed is the godfather for these banks here. Look, no change in capital requirements. I think this is very important. I think banks, which were outperforming as the yield curve steepened, we were getting some sense on the reopening trade, and banks were certainly starting to reaccelerate. I think this means banks have a lot more room to go. And I think the banks and the money center banks, at least, I would focus on Citi and Bank of America, but I focus first on Citi. I think they're going to be the ones that have the outsized moves. Now, banks like J.P. Morgan, as they were having record earnings, they were also putting aside an enormous amount on loan provisions. And I think the reserve roll-offs are powerful. And again, this is part of where I think the buybacks will be also powerful. Forget, they had record capital markets and underwriting and FICC trading. And I just, look, as someone that's long banks like Karen, I think this is very important news for the direction of these stocks.
Sure.
And the messages are mixed to me.
A big 2021 event could also be the release of those excess reserves back into the system. And you know, that certainly would be a good thing for bank investors. We should note the headline that just crossed at the bottom of your screen, Goldman Sachs also announcing that it will resume share buybacks next year. It did not specify the amount, but again, Goldman Sachs to resume its share buyback program next year. We're seeing that stock move higher by about 5%. We should note also that Wells Fargo also falls into the category of the 33 banks that were approved to resume buybacks. Remember that it had been sort of put in the penalty box, but it does fall into this category where profitability has been existent for four quarters, so it's able to do this. Brian Kelly, in terms of the banks, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously it surprised the market, but I think in the big picture, it's probably not that surprising because the pandemic threw the biggest real-time stress test at the bank, bigger than any government regulator could have imagined, and they survived. So I think in that sense, it's very positive for the U.S. financial system, obviously very positive for banks. But if you're at home now and you're saying, okay, what's next for the banks? It's exactly what you just mentioned. It's the roll-off of the reserves. And there's going to be this interplay between whether or not we get a stimulus package that would mitigate some of the potential losses these banks may have. If we don't get a stimulus package, then maybe those loss reserves aren't big enough. So that's really where the next crux of the bank trade comes from me. And I think in general, this is just a positive move. And as long as you don't get an economy that goes much, much deeper into weakness, then the banks should be fine.
Karen, your bank position is fairly large. So are you hedging that position? I mean, I'm just trying to understand how you, if you are worried that we haven't seen the worst of the credit losses because we just haven't seen the worst of the pandemic or the impact on the economy, then how do you protect that bank trade?
So I think that the banks being at such a discount to the market and such a they haven't recovered anywhere nearly as much as so many other industries. I think that that was already reflected in the prices that they were trading. This is sort of a procedural issue about when would they be able to do buybacks. I just think it would have been more conservative for the Fed to say, you have to wait. So I know if Sheila Bair were here tonight, she'd be not
mortified.
Happy with this. Yes, why not wait? Why not wait till they actually reverse reserves, right? Till they let those reserves out. So that part, I don't really get. As Brian said, I don't think it changes the story materially. I'd be curious, did a lot of people expect this already? If they did, why are the stocks up so much? That's $4 or $5 is a big move for JP Morgan.
Yeah. Tim?
I don't think the market expected this at all. And I'm surprised to hear it. I agree with Karen. I mean, why do you have to do this now? And again, I just, you know, I heard a Fed this week that was pointing out the risks to the economy, right? And Steve Leisman came on our show last night to point out some of the dynamics there. As banks have at times in the May, June rallies and rotation, we said there's something not right. Banks are either telling the story of Main Street, they're not telling the story of Wall Street. We don't really understand. This divergence is ominous in many cases. But I think really what it's telling you is that banks have some ways to rally.
They have other businesses. I mean, as we are highlighting that you know, the disconnect between Wall Street and Main Street, banks' thriving businesses have been those of Wall Street businesses, the trading, as you highlighted, Tim, the trading businesses. And that's where they really made the deal-making business. That's where they really made their money this year, Brian Kelly. So doesn't it make sense that maybe the banks are in a position now, if they've already got the capital reserves stored up, to resume the share buybacks? And maybe that's why dividend increases are not part of it, because dividend increases are permanent. Share buybacks can be started and stopped.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And I think it really just does go to the health of the banks. You know, my view on the roll-off reserves is there is probably a, if I'm looking at where the odds are, there's probably higher odds that the banks have over-reserved. And the market will also look through that, right? Even if it looks like it's trending in one direction, I think the market will look through and look to Q3 and Q4 of 2021 and say, all right, we're going to have this blip sometime in Q1 2021. But then once we get everybody inoculated, the reopening trade, you won't have to worry about that. And the reserves will roll off. And that'll be another catalyst for the banks. And just by the way, you won't have to worry necessarily about a yield curve steepening much more. The banks can still make money. They can buy back shares, and releasing those reserves would be good for their equity.
All right, let's move on to the other big story we're tracking for you on a Friday. Tesla driving straight into the S&P 500, the electric car company making a big U-turn in the after hours as it gets added to the index. Here we are down by 3%. This, of course, after Tesla hit yet another record high during the regular session. Karen, we've all been watching this very closely. What's your proclivity at this point when it comes to the stock? Earlier you said you would look to short it.
Thank you for bringing up a very painful trade. So I put in an order to short market on close. And then when I saw the stock trading down at maybe 3:40 p.m., trading down, right, 10 bucks or I don't remember, 12, I thought, wow, this is not quite what I was expecting, how this was going to play out. So I canceled my short, and it ended up the market on close price was, what, 6.95, I think? So that was very distressing that I did nothing. I would have covered right away. I was trading in the after hours or Monday morning. So I have no Tesla position, and yet I feel worse than I did yesterday having no Tesla position. I don't know.
Let's bring in Grace Battis of Grace Capital. She joins us now. We had some technical issues, which we've ironed out. So, Grace, we're happy to have you here join the panel. In terms of Tesla, I think amongst the broader trader panel here, you're actually bullish longer term.
I am bullish on Tesla. I think Tesla is being priced. It's expensive, okay? Everything is expensive. New York real estate is expensive. I think Tesla is being priced like a monopoly, and it reminds me of Amazon, okay? You could have bought Amazon, and you watched it go up and up and up, and nobody understood. Tesla has a market cap that's larger than all the other auto companies combined. I think it's got a lot of optionality here. And the secret to Tesla, so long as they can keep borrowing money for cheap, convertible stock, convertible debt, the stock is going to work and the strategy is going to work.
And they've done that several times this year in terms of shoring up their liquidity position with various secondary offerings, et cetera, in the marketplace. Brian Kelly, at one point, was Tesla ever one of those stocks that you put in a drawer and you leave?
In fact, what a phenomenal memory you have, Melissa. In fact, it was one of those. And it's my view on this. And the reason why you put it in the top drawer of you buy the stock, you put the certificates in the top drawer, or at least the top drawer of your digital side table. Nonetheless, the point being, I think Tesla is more than a car company. I think the investors in it are thinking of it as more than a car company. I think this is a play on the decarbonization of the electric grid. The Tesla automobile and their automotive department is just kind of the proof of concept. So if you think of this much more as a venture capital deal, where all these capital raises are similar, you know, are like a series A, B, and C, then you can see how there is much more upside to Tesla. And I think that's what the investors in Tesla are looking at.
All right, let's bring in Fast Money friend Gene Munster of Loop Ventures, who I know is watching the rebalance at the close very, very closely. I think with popcorn in hand is what you tweeted, Gene. So what'd you make of the action here? What should we expect on Monday morning?
Well, I made the action. You know, it's funny. I tuned off a minute before the close here. I had to apologize that I was remiss at leaving the party just before the fund started. But I expect it probably moderates a little bit on Monday. But what's more important is ultimately where this company is going. And if I can frame in, I think the panel's done a great job of really highlighting the importance of the story here, which first, there is no valuation support to Tesla regarding their current business, the current revenue, $45 billion a year. But when you think about the optionality value, and I'm going to make it as simple as possible, there are seven different verticals that they're going to be going after. Most people think of this as an EV car company, but there's autonomous taxis, robo-taxis. You have HVAC, insurance, even down to electric jets. I mean, all of this is on the roadmap. So I think Brian's venture analogy is most appropriate. And I think that regardless of what the action is on Monday, I think that this company can be a much bigger company in mm-hmm. the years to come. And one thing I just want to, there's one thing to look at the headlines and listen to what Tesla is doing and get enamored about where the stock can go. I think there's another discipline, which is actually just measuring what's going on in the marketplace. We recently looked at the software that's available and coming available in the next year from the automotive companies across the board, and Tesla stands above. It's not even close. I won't get into the details of it, but this company has a multi-year advantage in a market that will be turned upside down over the next decade.
Gene, you know, everybody's looking at this event as a forced buying event because managers will have to buy about $85 billion worth of Tesla stocks who are benchmarked to the index. And yet this is also a forced selling event. And not many people are talking about that in terms of what do fund managers sell in order to make room for Tesla. What's your view? You cover some of the high-flying sort of consumer discretionary techie type of stocks that might fall into that category.
Yeah, there is going to be a fracturing of FANG. It's very clear what's going to happen in the next few years, and what has worked in the past won't work in the future. Companies like Apple are really well positioned in a digital transformation. I think you're going to see money inflows to this. I think this is a $200 stock in the next year plus. But then on the flip side, you look at companies like Facebook and companies like Netflix. I think that those are sources of capital for these funds. I think just other traditional businesses are sources of capital, but I think that's going to be a strong theme of this fraction of FANG. The simple approach of owning FANG isn't going to work for outperformance. There's certainly great companies, but I think Tesla is one. You just need to own it and don't think about it. I like the idea Brian's put it in the drawer and forget about it. But I think companies like Apple are really going to be a big beneficiary, and Facebook's got a ton of headwind coming at it in the next couple of years.
Gene, great to speak with you. Thank you. Gene Munster, Loop Ventures. This change is also going to have a significant impact on the S&P 500 more broadly. Tesla is now the sixth largest company in that index. And because of Tesla, the S&P's earnings will fall 1.3% next year. Its P.E. ratio will rise to 22.6 times from 22.3 times. Tim, what do you think? Do you think that investors should be will feel this change, the volatility of the S&P 500 would theoretically go up too because Tesla's volatility is greater?
True, but it's also a $660 billion company, and conceivably there's more of a buffer built into that. But I think the valuation on the S&P is troubling. But you add in a 1,200 trailing PE stock here. I would just add to the whole story around Tesla, which people well chronicled that I haven't been a believer here, but two events have added basically almost $400 billion of market cap. Seemingly, a stock split announced on August 10th or 11th took the stock up 83% to a blow off top at the end of August, and then the S&P inclusion announcement, I think from November 16th through the current, is another 69%. That's 150% move in the stock based upon two technical events for a stock that, has been about technicals as well. So I think you have to remember that here. And I don't care what anybody says. Those are very big factors, I think, that will weigh on the stock.
All right. It's down by about 3% after hours. Coming up, shares of Nike also on the move after reporting earnings. The company's conference call is underway right now. We'll bring you all the details straight ahead. Much more fast. Stay tuned.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got a rare event for Friday night, an earnings alert. Nike shares popping after hours as strong online sales helped the company top revenue estimates. The company's conference call is now underway. So let's get the trade on this one. They also pointed out that Greater China really helped the second quarter. We saw sales there up by 24%. Kate, what do you make of Nike?
I think Nike, I looked at, took a quick peek at the quarterly results. They're doing everything they're saying that they're going to do. Okay, so they had a good quarter. Revenue was up 7 or 9%. The story really continues to be about digital. Okay, digital revenues were up 80, 60, 80, 90%. Just a tremendous number. I think the company does still have some challenges. The China story is very important for Nike. There's a lot of negative sentiment about China, how they thread that needle. Remember, Nike is still 70% non-U.S., but they had a good quarter. They had a, it's a great company, great management team. Had a tough year, okay? They were having a great year, and then COVID happened, had to close down stores. Things were very tough. Stock's still up 40%. Go figure.
Yeah, and it's actually gained 20% in just the past 3 months. I mean, people are getting more and more bullish as it's all that. Even with the majority of stores closed, it could still grow sales, Tim. And I think that's sort of what investors are so psyched about. It reminds me of Best Buy almost. The same phenomenon going on with Best Buy in terms of getting the same sales or greater sales with a footprint that's largely off limits to consumers.
Yeah, and direct sales were up 32%. I would go back to China. Mainland China up 25% is well in excess of what anybody expected. They were up 8% last quarter after being negative, and we know, you know, China is seen as a preview to what you're going to see in the U.S. So Donahoe's digital expertise is shining here. Not a cheap stock, but a stock I stay long. It's been a great year for Nike. Like so many, they come out of this better based upon trends that were in place.
All right, coming up on Options Action, which is the last one of the year. We're counting down to Christmas with some stocking stuffers you might want to add to your portfolio. But first, we've got your final trade. Stay tuned.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration. Our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Time for the final trade score on the horn. Tim Seymour.
Let's continue with Nike. And again, the app engagement up 80% year over year through November. I think this story continues to be very robust, even at a high valuation.
Kate Battis.
Intel's lower on Microsoft News. I'm buying Texas Instruments.
Karen Feinerman.
Yeah, so I bought some Morgan Stanley last week. And with today's bank news, I'm actually going to sell some of my Wells Fargo on Monday.
Brian Kelly.
Well, money is changing and PayPal is rapidly becoming the gateway to that change. So I buy some PayPal here.
All right. Well, that does it for us here on Fast Money. Do not move. A huge Options Action show to close out the year. Coming up, we'll be tackling the trouble brewing in transport, a last-minute stocking stuffer, and a trade on the S&P's latest edition. Options Action starts in 2 minutes. Have a great weekend. We'll be right back.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.